This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hello, all you hellbound atheists and indifferent agnostics. There's 30 million of us non-religious in this nation and growing. And this radio show is for you and for those of you who find skepticism an extreme intriguing topic. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And the show is produced by the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, a group that works to keep religion and government separate and to educate the public about the views of those of us who do not believe.
Our guest today will be Norm Allen, author of African American Humanism, an Anthology.
And this week's show is celebrating African-American freethinkers.
And according to the current American Religious Identification Survey, 11% of the African-American community identifies as non-religious. That's very close to the 15% national average for all races and ethnic groups.
We'll be talking with Norm Allen on the second half of today's show about what's new with African-Americans and humanism. And maybe talk a little bit about current events and what's going on in some nations in Africa.
For the first half of Free Thought Radio, though, we'd like to take a closer look at several African-American icons who dissented from religion, and we have some music and special clips selected.
Let's start with some of the historic African-American freethinkers. This month marks the adopted birthday of Frederick Douglass. He chose February 14th, Valentine's Day. Since he was born a slave, he didn't know the actual date.
He was born Frederick Bailey in Maryland in 1818, became a renowned abolitionist, editor, and feminist. He escaped from slavery at age 20, but he later wrote in his autobiography, "I prayed for 20 years, but received no answer until I prayed with my legs." He renamed himself Frederick Douglass and became an abolition agent, was often imperiled, speaking against slavery. He wrote three autobiographies. He published a weekly newspaper, The North Star. He was the only man to speak in favor of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's controversial plank of women's suffrage at that first women's rights convention in Seneca Falls, New York in 1848. He was later a U.S. Marshal for the District of Columbia, and his home there is a National Historic Monument.
And one of the great pioneers of civil liberties for blacks was, of course, W.E.B. Du Bois, born February 23rd, 1868 in Massachusetts. He attended the all-black Fisk College in Nashville, earned B.A. and M.S. in 1891 from Harvard. The book he wrote, called The Souls of Black Folk in 1903, made his name, in which he urged black Americans to stand up for their educational and economic rights. Du Bois was a founder of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and he edited their official journal called Crisis from 1910 to 1934. The black nationalist expanded his interest to global concerns, and he's called the father of Pan-Africanism for organizing international black congresses. He called himself a freethinker. In his autobiography, Du Bois wrote, "My morals," he put that word in quote, "my morals were sound, even a bit puritanic, but when a hide-bound old deacon inveighed against dancing, I rebelled. By the time of graduation, I was still a believer," in quotes, "in Orthodox religion, but I had strong questions which were encouraged at Harvard. In Germany, I became a freethinker. When I came to teach at an Orthodox Methodist Negro school, I was soon regarded with suspicion, especially when I refused to lead the students in public prayer. I flatly refused again to join any church or sign any church creed. From my 30th year on, I have increasingly regarded the church as an institution which defended such evils as slavery, color, caste, exploitation of labor, and war."
Turn to some of the other great freethinking African-American artists, including Scott Joplin, born November 24th, 1868. He was, of course, the king of ragtime. He wasn't the originator of ragtime, but the great popularizer of it, and ragtime was America's first uniquely national style of music. He was born in Texas, raised in Missouri. In 1899, Maple Leaf Rag became a huge hit, followed by dozens more, including The Entertainer, still popular today. We want to focus on the opera Timonisha that he wrote, not as well known, dealing with ignorant superstition and misery in the African-American community. And Timonisha was a woman who promoted education, and she was a contrast to the useless pastor in town. And Dan, you found a recording of Scott Joplin's opera Timonisha. It's very pretty. It might be a little hard for people to get the words. And this song is Superstition, and this character is giving a whole list of superstitions. So let's listen and see if you can figure that out.
If a knight while passing a graveyard, you shake with fear most.
Well, there you go. He's talking about all these superstitions, black cats and sneezing and dust, and sort of tongue-in-cheek, the chorus sings, tis true, of course, tis true.
Another great iconoclast and artist, Paul Robeson. You want to talk about that, Dan?
Paul Robeson was the son of a former slave, a preacher born in New Jersey. He was awarded a four-year scholarship to Rutgers, became that university's third black student. He was a 12-letter athlete, Phi Beta Kappa scholar, Cap and Skull Honor Society member, and valedictorian of his 1919 class. He earned a law degree from Columbia, encountered racist barriers, such as a white secretary who refused to take dictation from him. Paul Robeson turned to theater. He starred in Eugene O'Neill's All God's Chillin' Got Wings in 1924. He changed the words to Jerome Kern's song Old Man River when he starred in Showboat. It became the mellifluous bass singer's signature song. He made 11 films, gave popular concert tours around the country, but he faced the constant Jim Crow racism, even in Europe. The increasingly radical Robeson, questioning why American blacks should be loyal to a country that denies equal rights, was called before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, was denied a passport until 1958, spent time in Russia and abroad before returning to the U.S. According to Who's Who in Hell, Robeson was a naturalist and a non-theist. He died in 1976. And let's listen to him singing a eulogy. Paul Robeson sings about the freethinker and union organizer Joe Hill after being executed on what nearly everyone believed to be trumped-up charges.
After Joe Hill was executed, not Paul Robeson.
In Utah.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I am standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead, says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe, they shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe. why didn't I? And standing there as big as life, smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill.
That was Paul Robeson's beautiful eulogy to Joe Hill. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're celebrating Black History Month by looking at some of the famous African-American freethinkers. Coming up, we'll take a look at playwright Lorraine Hansberry and listen to a scene about atheism from Raisin in the Sun. Then we'll speak with Norm Allen about African-American humanism.
Hi, my name's Garth Hornbeck, and I'm from Bethesda, Maryland, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And that, of course, is a piano roll of one of Scott Joplin's most famous compositions, The Maple Leaf Rag. Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio, and we talked about Scott Joplin's non-theism in the previous segment. Coming up later on today's show, Norm Allen will talk about free thought and humanism in the African-American community. And now we're going to continue talking about some famous Black freethinkers, and there's a lot of them.
We move to renowned poet and playwright Lynn Hughes, born February 1, 1901 in Missouri. For four decades, Hughes chronicled the Black experience and perspective in powerful poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and children's books. And his essay in The Nation, The Negro Artist and the Racial Mountain, in 1926, really gave the Harlem Renaissance its due. His first book of poetry came out in 1930. His satire on corruption in Black storefront churches, Tambourines to Glory, was not popular with the clergy. Hughes traveled widely all his life, visited the Soviet Union, and he was forced to appear before McCarthy's Un-American Committee in 1953. He wrote a signature column for 20 years for the Chicago Defender.
And here's a poem that Langston Hughes wrote called Goodbye, Christ. Listen, Christ, you did all right in your day, I reckon, but that day's gone now. They ghosted you up a swell story, too, called it the Bible. But it's dead now. The popes and the preachers have made too much money from it. They've sold you to too many. Goodbye, Christ Jesus, Lord God Jehovah. Beat it on away from here now. Make way for a new guy with no religion at all. A real guy named Marx, Communist, Lenin, Peasant, Stalin, Worker, me.
Lorraine Hansberry was born in Chicago, the daughter of civil rights activists and intellectuals, and her play, A Raisin in the Sun, 1959, was the first drama by a Black woman to be produced on Broadway. And she was worked with Paul Robeson. The title of that play, A Raisin in the Sun, came from a line by Langston Hughes, and it's about a protagonist, an eager young woman determined to fight social convention and go to medical school. And she had a very tragically short life, cut short by cancer when she was 34. But we have an excerpt from that 1960s movie with Sidney Poitier, A Raisin in the Sun. Let's listen to this great dialogue, and you will hear something you don't normally hear on radio. It's a very long pause. Keep listening.
I'm going to be a doctor, and everybody around here better understand that.
Of course you're going to be a doctor, God willing.
God hasn't got a thing to do with it.
Benita, that just wasn't necessary.
No, Mama, neither is God. I get sick of hearing about God all the
time. Benita!
Mama, I mean it. Now, I'm just tired of hearing about God all the time. What has he got to do with anything? Does he pay tuition?
You about to get your fresh little jaw slapped.
It's just what she needs, all right.
Why? Now, why can't I say what I want to say around everybody else?
Because it don't sound nice for a young girl to be talking like that. You wasn't brought up that way. Me and your daddy went to the trouble to get you and brother to church every single Sunday.
Mama, you don't understand. Now, you see, it's all a matter of ideas, and God is just one idea that I don't accept. Now, it's not important. I'm not going to go out and be immoral or commit crimes because I don't believe in God. I don't even think about that. It's just that I get so tired of him getting the credit for all the things the human race achieves through its own stubborn effort. Now, there simply is no God. There's only man. And it's he who makes miracles.
Slap. That was from Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun. And we're running out of time, but we have to mention Zora Neale Hurston. She was born January 7th, 1891, the novelist and folklorist, and her famous novel was Their Eyes Are Watching God. And we have to have a kind word for Butterfly McQueen, Dan.
Butterfly McQueen was best known for her role as Prissy in Gone with the Wind. She was nearly a lifelong atheist. She didn't like playing those slave parts, but she did her very best, she said. She was a life member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and she became the first free thought heroine of our group in 1989. And one of the quotes of hers that we put on buses says this from Butterfly McQueen: "As my ancestors are free from slavery, I am free from the slavery of religion."
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. There were a lot more to talk about. We've run out of time, but coming up, we'll talk with Norm Allen about African-American humanism and freethinkers in his anthology about non-religious black writers, and another anthology about black writers taking a look at religion and rejecting religion. So stay tuned.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker, and this is Free Thought Radio.
And we're very happy to have on the phone with us today from New York, Norm Allen. Norm Allen is Executive Director of African Americans for Humanism. It's an educational organization primarily concerned with fostering critical thinking, ethical conduct, church-state separation, and skepticism toward untested claims to knowledge among African Americans. Norm Allen is the editor of the book African American Humanism, an anthology, and another book, The Black Humanist Experience, an Alternative to Religion. And he's deputy editor of Free Inquiry magazine. He travels a lot. His writings have been published in many newspapers around the U.S., and they have appeared in many books such as Culture Wars and the National Center for Science Education's Voices for Evolution. Welcome to Free Thought Radio again, Norman.
Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, I was just reading your most recent, your African Americans for Humanism has a newsletter called The Examiner. And
right.
And I'm always impressed with this newsletter by the depth of intellect. And you dispel that old stereotype that African Americans are not deep thinkers or humanists or movers and shakers. And that's basically the point of the books that you've written.
Right. I wanted to try to show that not only are we not in one category as far as our belief about religion concern, but we also have a very complex people. We are a complex people. And I wanted to show that there are those among us who don't fit into the stereotypical mold of being excessively religious, of going to church every Sunday, or having to believe in a supreme being. I had written an article for another encyclopedia called African American Religious Cultures. And this encyclopedia is edited by Anthony Penn, who, though he's a leading black religious scholar, he is a humanist. He does not believe in a supreme being. And he, like me, likes to try to show that our culture or we as a people are very diverse. And in the article I wrote for his book, I talked about the importance of understanding our history and saying that we do have our non-religious people who have contributed greatly to the success of us as a people. And so I tried to do that, and I think I've been pretty fortunate and pretty successful to a large degree in getting that message out.
So we should not think of African Americans as if they were just a group. It's so diverse. There's probably a continuum or a bell curve of beliefs in there.
Right. And what Anthony Penn likes to do, he also talks about unbelief even among African American slaves. There's this notion that as slaves, all of us believed in a supreme being, that we were either Christians or we were Muslims or we had our indigenous African religions, which we transported with us as we were brought across the seas. But the fact of the matter is, even among African American slaves, there were those who were highly critical of religion and saw that it was something that was very oppressive.
Did some of them write? Did they write things, or how do you know that?
Well, not they didn't so much write as talk about it. Penn has quite a few books, and one of the books he has is one called By These Hands. And in that book, he has some information about African-American slaves who were highly critical of the notion of a supreme being because they didn't see that this belief in a supreme being had anything to do with what they were going through. They were a praying people, but at the same time, they weren't getting any results.
Yeah, they weren't getting any answers, so that was opening
right.
their eyes. And
right.
I would think also that being spoon-fed religion by the slave masters would discourage a lot of people from believing.
Right, you would think so, but at the same time, religion was something that did serve as a way of giving people some type of hope. If they couldn't have any hope mm-hmm. in this world,
pie in the sky.
Hope in an afterworld, right?
Yeah.
And so often that has been our downfall. So often we have bought into these quietist notions of pie in the sky as our world around us crumbles. And that's something that a lot of us really haven't dealt with in a very strong way. This whole notion that if you believe in Jesus Christ, one day all of your problems will be solved, so you don't have to worry about what's going on in the here and now. And that notion is still very popular, not only among African Americans, but Africans as well.
I wonder if any of them ever wrote any non-gospel music. You know, when I was a kid growing up, you always hear about how the art of our country was so deeply influenced by gospel music. But
right.
As you're saying, they weren't all just subservient worshipers of the Lord.
Right. And it's interesting that you should bring that up because blues is a secular art form. And in many cases, Anthony Penn again writes about this in some of his works. In many cases, there were African-American blues artists who were not only questioning religion per se, but they were actually questioning a belief in God. And that's one reason that a lot of the preachers used to call blues the devil's music, because not only was it something that often dealt with sexual exploration, but it also dealt with the belief in God and how so often black people would pray and their beliefs would not be answered. And so there are people who've written about this, people like Anthony Penn, and there were various other scholars like William Jones, who is I guess you would call him more or less a religious humanist, but he has his non-theistic side in some cases. It's really kind of hard how to define him. But there really are some scholars out there who have written on the blues and the non-religious nature of the blues.
And, well, jazz, too, I would think.
Right, right. In fact, if you look at jazz, if you look at some of the artists, such as Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, they were pretty much non-religious. And back in the 1990s, I used to go to Kansas City a lot, and Kansas City was a real big hotbed of jazz. And there are still a lot of old-school jazz musicians down there who came out of a free thought tradition. So there is that non-religious tradition in black music that so often is glossed over.
And, of course, he might be called the father of modern American music, Scott Joplin with his Rags. We played a little bit of his music before your interview today, and Scott Joplin was excoriated. He got a lot of flack from the preachers in Texas and in Missouri where he lived because he was playing in bars and in brothels and in hotels, and he never played in a church, and they considered dancing and card playing to be this horrible, sinful lifestyle that he was promoting.
Right. And even today, you have among us some rappers who are very non-religious. You have some that are explicitly non-religious. You have some that are who don't really focus solely on the non-religious aspect, but who are still, nonetheless, people who don't subscribe to a religious lifestyle. And so you have rappers in hip-hop. There's one known as Great on Square, and he does quite a bit of rapping now. And he's attended some of these Free Thought conventions throughout the United States.
What's his name? Great on Square?
Right, Great on Square. Yeah. And he is explicitly humanistic. And I've heard from quite a few others. In fact, I just received a CD a couple of days ago from a non-religious rapper. So if you, you know, get on the internet and look into some of these rappers, you'll see that they are out there. And I think as a result of the internet, more and more people in the black community are coming out. They don't necessarily come out in real time, but they do come out online. And I hear from so many of them on a regular basis now.
Now, your book, The African American Humanism and Anthology, some of it is essays about African American humanists. Some of them are the essays themselves. You know, you, any of our listeners wanting to know more about Frederick Douglass's views or W.E.B. Du Bois' views or Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston can go to your anthology and read them. But you also have a newer book, The Black Humanist Experience, and we have a couple minutes before the break. What's that about?
Well, that is a book that was written by various black humanists, not only in the United States, but in other countries such as Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa, and other nations. And they're discussing their personal path to humanism, how it is and why it is. They rejected a belief in the supreme being and embraced a non-religious worldview. And they talk about the various ways in which they believe humanism can be used to solve problems that afflict society. And so that book was written back in 2004. And it's, again, a book that was geared towards showing that there is a non-religious aspect to black culture. And there are some pretty strong ideas. And people have some very strong critiques of theism. But so often that's lost in black studies.
We're hoping to have some African humanists on our show in the near future. Leo Igwe from Nigeria. If our station can get Skype hooked up, is that going to happen, Brian? If we can do it, he's nodding his head. If we can hook up Skype, I just spoke with Leo, a leading humanist in Nigeria, and there are many others around the country. And when we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about some of the other countries where the black humanist experience is making a difference. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio, and we're talking with Norm Allen about African American humanism and atheism, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Kyle Bailey from Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're speaking with author Norman Allen. He's written several books, including The Black Humanist Experience.
And his book is another book is called African American Humanism. Norm is the director of African Americans for Humanism. And Norm, I was reading through your newest newsletter, The Examiner, and you talk about America, but you also talk about other countries in here, articles from other authors, and are all Nigerians religious?
No, in fact, Nigeria has a very strong Free Thought tradition. When I first went to Nigeria back in 1991, there were three humanist groups in Africa. There was one in Ghana and two in Nigeria. Today, there are several in Nigeria. There are several on campuses. There's the Center for Inquiry Nigeria / Nigerian Humanist Movement headed by Leo Igwe, which is the largest organization there. There are also various others, like a group called Humanists Without Borders. And so in Nigeria, secular humanism and free thought and atheism have been growing by leaps and bounds in recent years, largely because of the rise of the Internet.
Is it safe to be an out non-believer in Nigeria?
Yes, it's safe to be an out non-believer, but it's not always safe to criticize the churches. For example, we started an anti-superstition campaign back in May, and Leo Igwe was ahead of that. It started in Ghana, and he took the campaign to Nigeria, Malawi, Kenya, and some other African countries. When he went back to Nigeria, he had confronted a so-called faith healer and a witch hunter, a woman named Helen Okpabio. And as a result of confronting her and trying to have her brought to justice for persecuting alleged child witches, she had her members of her church attack Leo. They broke his cell phone, stole his bag, broke his glasses and everything. So, you know, it can be dangerous if you're going to directly confront those in power. But as far as just being a secular humanist or atheist or agnostic, you really don't have a problem in Nigeria.
What about Uganda, where we're seeing, you know, they're calling for the death penalty, popular at least a call for the death penalty if you're gay? What about the rights of non-believers in Uganda? Do you know anything?
Right, it's the same situation. We have a Center for Inquiry Uganda there, and we also have some other humanists who have been very much interested in promoting humanism for several years, and they too are free to come out. It's not always easy, though, to have sponsorship on the campuses, because there is an organization called the Ugandan Humanist Effort to Save Women, a women's organization, and they're very popular because they do things such as rehabilitate prostitutes, teach them how to make dresses, teach them how to read, give them computer skills and what have you. And they were trying to get on the University of Makerere campus, and it was difficult because you need to have a sponsor, as you do in most colleges. But they finally were able to get someone to sponsor them, and now they're doing very good work. So Uganda is the same situation. I've been to Nigeria and Uganda. And I went to Uganda three times, and the first time it was very interesting because we had a humanist conference there, and we were talking about gay rights. It's just one part of the conference. As a result of our discussions of gay rights, we were attacked in one of their leading newspapers, The New Vision, and they called the conference a homo conference. And not only did they attack us verbally or in the paper, but they also put out veiled threats against humanists who attended the conference. They were pretty much saying that the humanists from Uganda who attended the conference wouldn't be so happy after we left and went back to our countries. So in Uganda, you have the president, you have members of parliament, you have influential religious leaders, you have the media coming out strongly and attacking people who are lesbians, gays, bisexuals, or transgendered persons.
And these are Christians?
Yes. Yes, they are Christians, and they are aided and abetted by conservative Christians in the United States, mm-hmm. such as Rick Warren and various others.
Now, do you have a notion of what might be the most free-thinking African country?
It probably would be Nigeria.
Really?
Nigeria's, you know, it's a big country. It's the biggest country in Africa, about 130 million people, and there are just humanist groups all over the place. There are humanist groups on campuses. Another country that comes to mind is Kenya. We have a Center for Inquiry in Kenya. And right now, the humanists there are trying to come up with an international day against witchcraft violence, because the belief in witches is very prevalent throughout the African continent. And in nations such as Malawi, Kenya, Nigeria, and other countries, people, especially young girls, have been killed or persecuted because they have been deemed witches by their pastors.
And this is Christian pastors again.
Right, right.
Reading from the Bible, which says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live."
Right. And so it's been pretty difficult, but still there are free thinkers over there who can come out. And today you have people who are getting letters published not just letters, but articles published promoting humanism, free thought, and atheism in countries such as Uganda, Nigeria, Kenya, and even Malawi.
Well, that is good news, but Norm, we've run out of the bad news. We've run out of time. And is there a website people can check more out on?
Right. They can come to www.secularhumanism.org and find out more about African Americans for humanism and the work that we're doing.
And you can, and your books are The Black Humanist Experience, An Alternative to Religion, and African American Humanism.
And people can join the AAA, is that right?
Yes, they can.
And they can get your periodical called The Examiner. Well, thank you, Norman. It's always fun talking with you. And from what you say, I guess there's hope for the world, so...
Yes, I think so, and we just want to keep plugging away.
And we also want to thank our engineer and our producer of today's show, Brian Tarani. And we want to thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio to listen to the archives and to sign up for a podcast of this and all of our shows.
Ask for more information at 1-800-335-4021. Go to ffrf.org to join us, to ask for free information, a complimentary packet, our newspaper, Free Thought Today, to find out what we do, the litigation, the education. And we encourage you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday